Welcome to the podcast, and what a podcast it is. you can thank me now, America, for solving the Jussie Smollett case.
I was not a believer at first, Glenn, but you really did nail it. So this case is closed, and I'm sure you'll be seeing reports on that all day today.
You're welcome. Also, Bill O'Reilly joins us, and we talk about the movie Unplanned with the governor of Utah, Gary Herbert, a very personal message on that.
And we should point out that this weekend, first of all, Unplanned is in theaters. There's 1,000 theaters nationwide showing it. You should go see it. It's about Abby Johnson, who is a Planned Parenthood worker.
She was the employee of the year nationally for Planned Parenthood.
So, and she has, she changed her mind and it's about her story. And then also we should point out that this weekend's interview podcast is with her, the real Abby Johnson. Where you go through the entire thing. That is, there's 29 episodes of this. You can go and you can binge all of them. But this weekend's is really important.
Yeah, it's Abby Johnson and really good. Boy, you'll just never look at it the same way. She said things that took my breath away. I had no idea. Had never looked at it the way the people at Planned Parenthood look at abortion. That's on the Saturday special that you can watch for podcasts. And this one is just, I don't need to say anymore. Just watch and learn from my genius and the solving of the Jussie Smollett case on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
This has solved two problems. One, America's so racist. America's so racist. No, it's not. These hate crimes. No, it's not happening. It's not happening. And I'll explain here in a second. Stu, explain your experiment that you guys did last night.
Well, as you know, Glenn, this case has gripped the nation. And Jussie Smollett has come out and said he was innocent since day one, and he's told the truth since day one.
Yeah.
And most people truly want to believe the best. And others.
Right.
And we want to believe Jussie and his incredible story of how white people who were MAGA voters in Chicago, which is an incredibly large population of people, came after him and committed a hate crime on him. And we want to believe that. But the problem is it's hard to get past the fact that two people he knew very closely and had given large amounts of money to happened to be on camera at a hardware store buying every single thing they needed to commit a fake hate crime on Jussie Smollett.
Right. And so what did they buy? They bought bleach. We have it right here.
They bought a red hat.
Red hat. Right.
And
here.
They bought rope or twine.
Twine.
So
got it.
I was inspired by recently watching Making a Murderer Season 2.
Yes.
And basically, if you haven't seen that, they go back after the first season and try to figure out where the initial case went wrong. And they recreate all of these key moments in the case with evidence. And that, for example, they bought a life-sized in the real weight doll of a woman that was supposedly killed. And they dipped her hair in blood and they kept throwing her into the back of this wagon. So SUV, so that they could see what the blood splatter was like, and then they could prove how that was done. So they were like reverse engineering all these events.
Sure, sure.
So I thought last night, what if we went to the hardware store and bought all the same things that these Nigerian brothers purchased, and then we could recreate our theory of what the crime is to get Jussie off the
hook. And so what was the theory?
The theory was that it was not a hate crime. It's ridiculous.
Sure, sure, sure.
It's not a fake hoax crime. What they did is they wanted to, in a similar fashion that you did with this wonderful or controversial painting that that you found at a yard sale.
At a yard sale.
And you went to the yard sale. This is what gave me the idea is you went to the yard sale and you just wanted to buy a blank canvas.
Yes.
So you just picked up any painting and you brought it home and you looked at it and you realized it was a very controversial Adolf Hitler Planned Parenthood painting. What are the odds?
What are the odds? What are the odds?
Low.
Don't know who the artist is.
Right.
Yeah.
And so my thought was maybe what they wanted to do is purchase not a red hat.
Yes.
but a white hat.
White
so
hat.
So that they could design, because they're fashion designers.
Right.
They wanted to. Well, they
maybe
are.
Maybe they are. Maybe they are. Maybe
and they're,
they
they're models. They're models.
Okay,
they're
all
industry.
Right. Okay, all right.
So they wanted to buy a red hat. They were going to bleach the red hat to make it white so they could design their new hats that they wanted to sell. Now, that does not explain, of course, the rope.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Marissa and I were talking about it today. Mm-hmm. She said they did not buy any gloves, Glenn. So you have to tie the hats in and dip it in the bleach.
There you go.
Okay.
That's
what you're doing.
I think it's a plausible theory, and I think we could have had that to at least the Supreme Court.
Right.
However, the problem occurred when we tried to bleach the hats that we purchased last night for 12 hours in bleach, and what happened was they somehow got darker red.
They're just kind of like they've been worn for a while, which gave me the idea. Okay, where'd this crime happen?
We have to
answer for the red hats, the rope, and the bleach.
That's hard.
It's hard.
Very difficult.
What were they doing besides this crime? And the rope, I'll remind you, was tied in a noose.
Ah, that's very true.
Okay, mm-hmm. So it's not just that they used the rope, so that wouldn't have worked with the hat and the bleach if you're trying to make it white. So where did this crime happen?
In Chicago.
Enough said. I would rest my case, Your Honor, if all of the jurors weren't such dopes.
You would not be a good lawyer.
Right.
You don't want to start off a trial with that.
This jury is full of dopes. I'd rest it because I know, Your Honor, you know where I'm going when I say a hat, bleach, and ropes tied into nooses.
In Chicago. Right. As a juror, I don't understand where you're going at all.
Okay. Right. Okay. First of all, let's just start with the hats. People like to wear hats. Am I right, Your Honor?
You're absolutely right.
Okay. What is the problem of wearing a hat in Chicago?
Well, one problem would be that it's quite windy in Chicago.
Give me your hat. Give me the hat you did yesterday.
The Windy City.
The Windy City, Your Honor. I think you see where I'm going. Now,
don't see where you're going.
Let
yet,
me ask
to
you
be
this.
Clear.
Look at the top of this ball cap. What do you see on the top of the ball cap?
There's a little button there at the top.
Yes.
And they have several small holes.
Oh, what is that? I'm sorry. What was that?
Several small holes.
What are those holes for?
Ventilation?
That's a stupid way to ventilate, right? Why would you do this? This is an all-cotton hat. This, Your Honor, I contend, was something that the defendant saw, and it sparked an idea. Everybody is losing their hats. Now, these holes are a little small. Now, watch me. Watch me closely as I slow down for the jury. All I'm going to do is I'm going to cut the hat.
I ask counsel why he keeps insulting the jury. You're supposed to be winning them over, just in case you're not clear of how this process works.
Because they're going to feel stupid when they're done. Okay. They're just going to feel like, oh, my gosh. It's one of those things like, how come I didn't invent the toothbrush?
That's a great point.
Okay.
So wait, now you've cut...
I've cut those two holes by the ears, you know, at the top. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've cut them into bigger because why? I don't have small little thread or something. I bought this at a hardware store and I'm going for a rustic. Now, this is important. I'm going for a more rustic, authentic look. What's everybody into right now?
That's a really
Being
broad question.
Authentic,
oh,
right?
Okay.
You want something authentic.
That's not what I would have guessed, but yeah,
well,
go ahead.
Because you're in the jury box. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have to cut these holes open a little bit more. And remember, authentic, something that looks like, man, he's been wearing that forever.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's worn a little bit.
It's worn a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's got a couple of holes here. Now, if you want to make a strap for a hat, you could just make a strap for a hat. But that is not authentic, and who wants that strap underneath your chin? So what you
wait,
you cut...
Wait, hold on.
What?
A strap for a hat, And who wants the strap under your chin?
You don't want the strap under your chin.
So in theory, this would be a strap that
keeps your hat on. Do I have to slow this down even more?
You do.
This hat.
So this is a hat. Like
what is the object? What did I say? Please.
Like Mickey Mouse ears. Mickey Mouse ears, where they kind of strap. There's a strap for kids on the bottom of their so they don't fall off. No.
Could you please read the transcript back for the? Now even the judge is a dope. What is the goal here? People want to wear hats. It's in Chicago.
They love
it's
hats.
It's windy.
It's windy.
Your hat will blow off.
Right.
Then it's blowing down the street. But if you're going to put a hat on, first of all, you're going to look like a little stupid kid with a little bow under your chin or, you know, a little snappy thing underneath. And then people in Chicago, they're mostly fat. That will just cut into their double chin.
So now you're calling the jury dumb and fat?
They are. Look at them.
Oh, yeah.
Look
at
them.
I can see that, yeah.
All right. So you don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a 1 minute break, and I'm going to come back and dazzle you.
You're doing a break in the middle of the trial?
Yes.
What do you mean you're taking a break?
I'm taking a break. Look. These two guys from Nigeria
right
or wherever the hell they're from,
uh-huh.
They don't have any real money. I got to do a commercial to pay for this genius.
You've sold commercial time in the trial?
In the trial, I have.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Let me go to Jamie. Hello, Jamie. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Glenn, this is Jamie. I am so excited to talk to you. Okay, so I just found out from my husband that you're going to be in Utah today.
Yes.
Or maybe you're here already.
No, I'm on my way today.
Okay, great. Well, we just opened the most coolest ice cream parlor 4 months ago. So it is a Colonial Tavern. You walk in and everyone's in Colonial clothing, including my husband, who is in a tri-corner hat, making the ice cream. It's homemade ice cream. Like, you can watch him make it. And all of our flavors are named after George Washington.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Where is this?
So 20 minutes south of Thanksgiving Point. So it is in a town called Vineyard, right by UVU, kind of by UVU. It's west of Orem. It's a new little town that's just booming. And there's a megaplex theater.
What's the name of it?
Right there.
What's the name of it?
Rookers.
Okay. What is it?
Rookers.
Say it again. Whippers?
Okay. Brooker. Our last name is Brooker. So it's Brooker's Founding Flavors.
Okay.
Brooker's Founding Flavors. Kind of like the Founding Fathers.
Oh.
Founding Flavors. And it's so
I like
fun.
That.
This is history and yummy ice cream.
And it's to die for ice cream. It is 18% butterfat with a mix of custard from a local
dairy. Oh, my gosh.
It doesn't have hormones or antibiotics. And the ice cream is amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
You looked at our Google reviews. Our Google reviews are 5 stars, and we've only been open for 4 months. And in fact, tomorrow is our 4 month anniversary of our grand opening.
I will tell you, there is nothing. The next time I come into town, I will go. I will tell you that my schedule is so tight. I am literally everybody is. It's like crazy. There's no time for ice cream. That's how bad it is.
What do you mean? There's no time for ice cream. What the heck kind of sentence
you would not,
is that?
You would not believe. I've got like 14 things to do, and everybody's like, "You are late 1 minute for this. 1 minute for this."
Okay, we will make it a plan because we've been on your show, my husband and I. Years ago when you were in New York City, we were homeschooling our kids. And so we brought our two daughters onto the Liberty Treehouse show twice.
Get out of here.
And then my husband and I came back, and we, like, held George Washington's compass. There's, like, an audience that you let hold the compass and put a thumb.
Shut up. Oh, well, I have to come. So when did you start making ice cream?
Oh, this is a 20-year dream. So my husband got a law degree and an MBA, and he's just wanted to make ice cream. So he studied on the side. Aside of being a lawyer and being in sales, he has been studying like at different places on how to make ice cream. And he's a former JAG for the Army. And this killed himself.
Can you
transport it? Bring it to the theater. What are you talking about?
Can you ship it to Dallas or something?
I can meet you tonight. I can get you some ice cream. I can get you, George. You tell me who your favorite founding flavors are, founding fathers, and we will bring the ice cream.
Well, you know who my favorite founding father is.
But listen to these flavors. James Madison's Constitutional Crunch, Thomas Jefferson's Declaration of Cookie Dough.
Oh, my gosh.
Give me chocolate or give me death.
What is the George Washington flavor?
Oh, it is loaded peanut butter. Loaded is chocolate.
Oh.
It's the Reese's Pieces, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Franklin's Black Raspberry Republic, if you can keep it. That's the name of the ice cream. At some of these, you really went down a long... This one's Nathan Hale's regret that he has but one flavor to give for his country is the name of the ice cream.
Isn't my husband awesome?
I love it.
It is so delicious. So,
all right, Brookers.
And we'll bring it to you tonight.
Brookers.
Founding Flavors.
Brookers Founding Flavors. Oh. And what town is it in again?
It's in Vineyard, Utah, right west of Orem.
Oh, John Adams. Oh, my. Ooey,
you have an airport there. You have an airport there.
There's a movie theater. There's a Geneva Megaplex, and we're right in front.
Okay, well, a movie theater is an awful lot like an airport, but that's, you know, whatever. Okay. Jamie, thank you so much. God bless you. And good luck with your business. Good luck with your business.
We'll see you soon.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye. I'm going to be in Utah tonight. Got a lot of things. The governor is going to be at this premiere. There's several people that are going to be sitting in the audience that are going to see this. They've added like 10 different showings of it tonight. Just look for MegaplexTheaters.com, MegaplexTheaters.com. Come with me and see Unplanned tonight in Utah.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Mr. Bill O'Reilly, welcome to the program, sir.
Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
Excellent. Here I am.
Yeah, in all of your glory. Bill, it's been an interesting week. I have never seen so many people disappointed that our president wasn't a traitor.
That's true. There's no doubt about it. And proves malice.
That narrative...
You know, if you're going to look at it on a legal viewpoint, there's your malice.
That that has changed, however. They first were saying... He's going to get nailed. Then when he wasn't, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. Now they're saying by Wednesday, the narrative had changed yet again to it's a cover up.
I know. But I mean, it's kind of like the Titanic. The narrative changes like, you know, it's bad, but
not that.
OK, so you got to divide it up. So let's take television first, because that's the most visible and emotional that we have in this country. So these MSNBC and CNN people are in a free fall of ratings descent. You know that, right? You've seen
mm-hmm.
the numbers?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I get them every day.
You know, I don't see the numbers. I'd love for you to tell me the numbers, because
okay,
I haven't actually seen them.
I'd say 40%.
Oh, my gosh. From where they were?
From the crest of the we're going to impeach Donald Trump, and then we'll give everybody a pitchfork and walk up to the castle and get him.
So what do they have? Now, like, what's their – I mean, I hate to go so inside baseball, but
sure.
What do they have now?
Well, CNN does not have one program in 24 hours that gets more than a million viewers, not one.
And that's two plus, or is that 25?
That's two plus.
Two plus?
Demographics don't matter anymore, because demographics were destroyed about a year and a half ago. So no cable news program does a good demographic anymore. 25 to 54 Americans are gone. But the two plus,
God.
Those are the elderly people that watch cable news, and kids 3 and 4 years old who are just sitting there playing, and it's
people
on.
Trapped in the airport.
Yeah. So anyway, CNN does not do one program with more than a million viewers, which I've never seen that before.
I've never seen that.
Right.
Yeah.
MSNBC, Matta used to be vying for the number one slot, the most watched program. She was doing 3.5 million some nights. She's down at 2.3 million. And this is in 2 or 3 days. All right. It's not a gradual divide. And then all of the other programs have collapsed on a program as well. So there you have an industry now the hate Trump television industry that doesn't know what to do and is panicking. Now, you would think that maybe they would show a little contrition. Say, look, you know, we really thought that this was a serious situation the nation should know about, but turned out that it wasn't what we described it to be, but our mistake was not made out of malice. No. Instead, they said just what you said. Oh, it's a cover-up. And then, you know.
But, Bill, that makes, I mean, they painted themselves in a corner. I mean,
right,
and I know you're up.
People are going to watch you.
Right. No, but wait. Your op-ed covers this. This is the problem with people who are absolutists. And, you know, people always claim that I was a never Trumper. I was not a never Trumper. I said, if I'm wrong about this guy, and I hope I'm wrong, if he's doing those things, I'll be the first to say he did those things and I was wrong. I've been right on a lot of stuff that really concerned me, and I've been wrong on some stuff. And so I call the balls and the strikes. But the people who have either been never Trumpers and who will not budge from that and recognize, I mean, you still may not vote for Donald Trump, but you have to recognize, wow, some of the things he's done really good. Some of the things like last night, I'm not thrilled with that. I still think that's a problem. Stop it, Mr. President. Please be the president. But nobody in media did that. It was one way or another. And if he would have come out and it would have proven him to be in bed with Vladimir Putin, then you would have had the same thing, I think, with a lot of people on the other side. They would have said, this is just a deep state. You have to
matter, though, because people are people, but broadcasters and journalists are supposed to be professionals.
Yes, I know. But they didn't. But they didn't do that. And so now they don't have a choice, Bill. Their audience doesn't
have a choice.
No, wait. Their audience does not want to hear. And the only people that were left were the people who just wanted to hear bad stuff. And everybody who is gone and hadn't been watching them, they're not coming back because
right,
they don't trust
minute,
them.
Though. So then you're over. That's it. You're the Baltimore Orioles. You're not going to,
don't
you
use
know,
a sports
compete.
Analogy with me because that could be good or bad. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. And the other thing is I can't identify with you about you call balls and strikes because I'm never wrong. I'm never wrong. All right? I just strike. All right, but what you've put yourself in a position to defend or explain is now CNN and MSNBC go, well, we're the fraud network. Want more fraud? Come on in. We got
no, I know. I'm not defending them. I'm explaining it.
No, but you're explaining that strategy is insane.
I know that. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm
Comcast
telling you.
Comcast and AT&T,
yes,
the lords who own Thayer, are going, hey, we got a special on fraud this week. Come on in and watch our fraudulent broadcast.
Pat, Stu, what did I say for the last year, every single day before we left Fox? What did I say about the cable news industry? We have to get out of here because
it's over.
It's going to burn itself down to the ground because they were not.
Well, that didn't happen until I left.
No.
And, now,
I'm not talking about Fox. I'm talking about the industry as a whole. If you look at what has happened to our broadcast industry, they have just sold their soul to.
They sold their souls to either love or hate Trump.
Yes.
They sold their souls for the money. And when you sell your soul for the money, the devil shows up.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And the devil just showed up in the form of Mueller. Here's Satan. He didn't do it. So you all pay a price. And the price is that you have a network that employs thousands of people, and you can't explain what you did. So who's going to watch it?
Oh, it's going to get worse.
As you said, you were right about this. This is a strike for Beck. The zombies will watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just nickname all my shows Cuomo of the Living Dead, Wolf Blitzer of the Living Dead. All right? Because that's all who's going to watch it. And so then that's it. That's the television industry. Newspaper industry, a little bit different. Now, the New York Times, the Washington Post, they think that they are the best, Beck. They're the smartest. They're the most honest.
Well, they won Pulitzer Prizes for this.
Eyes in darkness.
Mm-hmm.
That's the slogan of the Post.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know what? they'll stay in business because Bezos runs the Post and is a gazillionaire, and the Sulzberger family runs the Times. They're not going out of business. But who believes them? Only the living dead believe them.
Well, okay, I will say
no
this.
No one believes them anymore.
I believe the subscription of the Times. I believe the Times has actually done well in this atmosphere, where cable news has not.
They have done well in a sense that they had got a few zombies to sign on to their internet thing.
Right.
Their paper, okay? I mean, that's hemorrhaging. They said themselves, Beck, then in 3 years, they might not even publish a newspaper. It might be totally online because zombies don't like newsprint on their hands. It's hard. They don't wash their hands. It's hard to get it off. So anyway, you've got a number of things. But the Democratic Party thing is the most important for our country. So in the Democratic Party, then you had the same thing.
Okay, hang on, because this is going to get interesting.
You gotta when we get into,
I got to take a break.
Right.
Yeah, I got to make money. You know why? Because money keeps
you spend too much.
Because we make money, and then we can pay for the transmitters and everything else that keep your voice alive.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm
that's
working
what,
gratis. So yeah. Everybody
fair point.
So a lot of people work for free. Nothing wrong with that. Slavery.
This is why you have to go to BillO'Reilly.com and subscribe, because
yes.
Poor Bill is just suffering.
He's suffering.
He's just suffering. He's
suffering.
On the verge.
Poor white man suffering.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. All right, Bill. So now you say the Democratic Party is important. What they do, this is important for America.
Right, because you don't want a democracy not to have legitimate choices. I mean, you want to have vibrant debate. You want to have a situation where you get challenges to power. I mean, I want President Trump to be challenged, and I want it to be intelligent, because that's where you find the better solutions.
Correct.
when everybody has to think and has to come up with a better idea.
Correct.
But now you got the party of hate. I mean, it can anybody dispute that?
Do we have from yesterday the audio from Joe Biden on the white culture? Could we play that here? I don't know if you've heard this.
Yeah, I saw that. But look, he's just babbling.
No.
You don't have
no,
to play it anymore. He doesn't even know what he's saying.
Yes, yet. He does.
No,
listen.
He doesn't. He's 78.
Hang on
he
just a second.
He doesn't know what he's saying. They put things in front of him, and he just babbles.
Wait a minute. How old are you? 80? 85?
12.
Come on. How old are you? Seriously. 90?
I'm not going to tell you.
91? 97?
Because I'm working for free.
Hang on. Here's Joe Biden. Do we have it?
A really notable woman, Anita Hill, professor, showed the courage of a lifetime, talking about her experience being harassed by Clarence Thomas. We knew a lot less about the extent of harassment back then, over 30 years ago.
No, we didn't.
But she paid a terrible price. She was abused through the hearing. She was taken advantage of.
No.
Her reputation was attacked. I wish I could have done something. I opposed Clarence Thomas' nomination. I voted against him. But I also realized there was a real and perceived problem the committee faced. There were a bunch of white guys. No, I mean it sincerely. A bunch of white guys hearing this testimony on the Senate Judiciary Committee. So when Anita Hill came to testify, she faced a committee that didn't fully understand what the hell it was all
so
about.
So he goes on to say, this white culture, man, we got to get rid of it.
Number one, I guess I missed the Clarence Thomas trial where evidence was introduced and he was convicted by a jury of his peers. Did you guys see? I don't know why I missed that.
No, I don't think they had one, but yeah.
So there's Joe Biden. Due process? Nope. Bye. No due process for Joe. Uh-uh. Secondly, so Joe doesn't want to be white anymore. He doesn't, because this is not a good thing in the Democratic precincts. If you're a white guy, that's not good. That's Beto's problem. Beto's white. Now, I understand he's going to clinics, but he's white. And, you know, white guys are the problem, Beck. I mean, you and I are the poster problems for the white guy thing. So it's absurd, and I really believe that Biden just babbles. I don't think he thinks what he says. Got that in common with Donald Trump. Donald Trump will just get up there some nights and just babble because the crowd is whipping him up or whatever. He's not thinking about what he's saying. He just says it. And Biden does the same thing. So we're going to have a really very entertaining debate.
You think Biden is going to be the nominee?
That's my front runner. It's yeah. Biden, Kamala Harris. Hey, I got some inside information on the Democratic Party. You want it?
Yeah.
Okay. So now, you know, I don't use anonymous sources, so I can't confirm this information, but it's gossip. It's good gossip. All right. So the Beto O'Rourke campaign is being supported by the Obama people. And the Kamala Harris campaign is being supported by the Hillary people. And I got that from a very, very high-ranking Democrat. But I can't confirm. I just thought it was a very entertaining gossip.
So I think this actually really makes sense. If you saw how Barack Obama was treated on Capitol Hill when he went up and tried to speak to the freshmen, and he was like, "Guys, stop it!" And Omar actually came out and said, "You know, look, you were a failure yeah. of a progressive president." I mean, they are so extreme now that Barack Obama is looks like a white GOP-er to them. And
I know. Let's get back to the Mueller report and how the Democratic Party absorbed it. So you didn't have anybody in the party saying, "Hey, you know, I'm glad this is over. This was not good for the country because our president had to spend 50% of his time defending himself against these charges, and now he can get back and we can try to get solutions to vexing problems." Did you hear one Democrat say that?
No, in fact, I was shocked at how they were so saddened that our president wasn't a traitor. It was crazy.
Well, yeah, I saw more of that on the media than I saw in the Democratic Party. But I was waiting for one Democrat, just one.
Yeah, none.
Yeah, to say, okay, the system worked. We did what we had to do. And now it's good that we don't have to do this anymore.
No, I like the fact
the border problem.
I like the fact that they were talking during Kavanaugh that they had to have the FBI because the FBI can do things that Congress can't do. And then this week they were saying, well, it's a good thing it's out of the hands of the FBI because we as Congress can do things in investigations that the FBI can't do.
Look, they're not going to do anything. It's over. It's over. And it's going to get worse with the Horowitz report, the DOJ Inspector General, and the Huber report. He's the U.S. attorney appointed by the attorney general to look at the FBI. Those two reports are still going to drop. So it's going to get worse for the "we hate Trump, he's a traitor" crowd.
So, Bill.
Yo.
We left it off at the Democratic Party and what you think is coming our way.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to present themselves, the Democrats, as the party of hate, they're going to lose. And I don't see how they get out from under that with not one reasonable person presenting what we just talked about before the break, that, okay, you know, we accept the investigative conclusions, and now we want to solve the border.
So, Bill,
make
know
the economy better.
I know you are you're a student of history as much as I am. So, let me give you a theory. Every time the socialists rear their ugly heads in America, they do the same thing. They start to become arrogant and they just think everybody's with them and they scare the hell out of Americans and Americans go running the opposite direction. It happened in the, you know, 10s and 20s. It happened in the 40s. It happened again in the 30s and 40s. It happened again in the 60s. It's happening now. People freak out when they see, when that mask starts to come off, and they're like, oh, wait, we don't want this. I think they've overplayed their hand so much on so many places that, for instance, with the Donald Trump thing, they now see they have completely destroyed their credibility. And even the people who are Democrats, I've heard Democrats, you know, Democratic neighbors, not people on TV, Democratic neighbors say, enough. The guy, right. We did 2 years, enough. Same right. thing with the abortion thing. I'm not for infanticide. This is ridiculous. Enough. Get rid of the free market. Oh, come on. Enough. Reparations. Give me a break. People want to be good. They want to get along. They want good race relations. They want women to be treated fairly. They want people to be given a chance. But the socialists now and the Democrats have so overplayed their hand that I think this week we saw the snowball that they were packing, and they were just trying to push it up to the top because then it would roll down the other side and crush the city. I think it stopped, and they keep packing it bigger and bigger, and it's about to roll back on them.
Well, I don't know about the snowball. I kind of missed that. It was not snowing here in New York. But you're right. Oh, boy, does that hurt. Oh, I just got this sharp pain and right on my chest.
Yeah, I know. You're about to have a lot of those.
And there is proof. Because of the vote on the Green New Deal. So this amused me greatly. So Mitch McConnell, I'm not a fan of his, but he's this old-time political guy.
Go ahead.
Knows
you can
every
say
rule, you know.
Yeah.
You know, nobody knows what he's talking about, but he knows every rule. Mm. He says, you know, we're going to vote on this Green New Deal. And the Democrats go, no, we don't want to vote on it. And they go, and he goes, well, I don't care. We're going to vote on it. Under the guise of, well, we want to debate this seriously in the Senate, so we need 60 votes in order to get that done. That was the vote. So you have to vote for the debate. So here's what I loved. Senator Edward Markey of Massachusetts, who I've known for many years, and he's not a foolish man, okay? He co-sponsored the Green New Deal.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't vote for it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even vote for his own bill. No one voted for it. All right. All the Republicans and four Democrats voted against it. And the rest of the Democrats voted present, as Barack Obama used to do when he was in the Senate, which means I don't want any part of this. So
I hope Mitch McConnell, by the way, I hope Mitch McConnell, because what AOC said was, I told them we should all just vote present. Everybody should just vote present in the Senate.
She told them.
She told them. So she's running the party now. But anyway.
She's going to start a new party. Did you hear this?
No. A Tupperware party?
No. It's the Like You Know party.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Like, you know?
So like.
Yes.
So like you know. She was actually saying, and everybody parroted this was just a trick that Mitch McConnell played, and we really need to debate it.
It was a trick. Yeah. She was actually right. It was a trick to embarrass her.
Right, but it wasn't a trick. It was, let me introduce your bill. It's not really a trick. When you write a bill, let me introduce it.
Do you believe in channeling, Beck, where you can talk to the dead? I mean, you talk to Stu, so I know you have experience here.
Yes.
But do you believe in channeling?
No, I don't. Okay. Why?
Well, I do, and I channeled Eugene V. Debs.
Mm. Oh, wow.
D-E-B-S, the first socialist candidate to ever run for president of the United States. And Eugene told me in a little seance, all right? They're insane. I wouldn't vote for this. Eugene Debs is not on board. That's how dumb this whole thing is. And dumb is the word.
But I hope that McConnell takes her up and says, okay, let's have a debate on this. Let's open that up to the floor.
Nobody wants to debate it because it's so stupid.
I know that.
No one supports this.
I know.
Raul Castro called me and said he was offended by this. And I had an interpreter. I knew what he's saying. I speak a little Spanish.
So, Bill, last thing. I know your book comes out, The United States of Trump, and how the president's how Donald Trump really sees America. It goes on sale in September, but you can pre-order it now. Let me hear you talk about how you felt last night watching the president, if you did.
Okay. And it's an excellent question because I'm writing this and it's driving me nuts. It's the hardest book I've ever written. Killing Jesus was so hard to write because we had to confirm with Roman records and Jewish records. But here, I can't get research that is reflective of honesty. Everything's been written about the man is a lie. And I have to do it myself. In fact, after I hang up from you, I've got two people that I'm speaking with. These are all eyewitness people, no anonymous sources in the book. Mm-hmm. All right, so I wasn't surprised by anything except the profanity that Trump delivered last night. I don't know why anybody would be surprised.
No. I'm not surprised. I'm not even surprised by the profanity. I mean, and it was one. It was one.
And I'm not. I wasn't offended. I mean, my language sometimes gets a little rough, as everybody knows.
But it's not for the president. The president shouldn't be doing
that. No, he shouldn't. But he doesn't have any discipline in his speaking style.
Right.
All right. And he never will. All right. And I explain that in the book. I explain why he doesn't have discipline in his speaking style, how he goes about things. But Donald Trump is a man who basically is going to play always, every second of his existence, to his base. He's going to play to the base. And this is what everybody has to understand when he speaks. His base in Michigan, all 12,000 people who showed up, wanted him to rip these Mueller people up. That's what they wanted, Beck. They came to hear that. And he gave it to them. He doesn't care about diplomacy. He doesn't care about hurt feelings. He doesn't care at all about commentators saying that he's a barbarian. He plays to his base.
How is he going to win?
Always.
How is he going to win? Because I think there is a lot of people.
Another excellent question.
There are a lot of people. A lot of people really, you know.
No. Another excellent question by Glenn Beck, everyone. Big round of applause all over the country. Look, his calculation is, you may not like me, but they're so bad and they're so much worse than I am that you can't possibly give them more power.
Well, I will tell you this. I will tell you this. And this is one of the things that I saw that Captain America is now coming out and saying, I've got to speak out against, you know, these Trump people. How could you possibly vote for Trump? How could you possibly vote for anyone who will not stand against infanticide? How can you vote for anybody who will not stand up for the free market system? You know, they've gone so far beyond anything I recognize as Western civilization now that there is absolutely no choice. If the election were held today, there is no choice. And so I understand that. However, if he would try just to knit together just a little bit by softening this rhetoric just a little bit, it would be easier to seal the deal. Do you agree?
I mean, stepping back, of course, if I were in the White House advising him, I would go over the speeches and then take out the stuff that's extreme.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's going to do it anyway. He'll just ad-lib it.
I'm just going to say that. But he's not going to listen because he gets whipped up. And in his soul or in his being, fiber, he's angry.
And I would be too.
He wants to be an Avenger. He wants to be an Avenger.
Good trade.
And that's his presentation. And he'll either live or die on it. I don't expect him to modify. All my research shows that he has never in his entire life modified. The only person that he listened to in his entire life was his father, Fred. And Fred's not here anymore.
I
think you can expect him to slash and burn, And I don't think he's going to dwell on Mueller much longer. But once the other two reports drop, then he's going to go to town.
Bill O'Reilly, thank you very much. Again, his book, The United States of Trump, How the President Really Sees America, goes on sale in September. You can pre-order now. Thank you so much, Bill. I appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Have a great weekend.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
You know, I moved to Texas for a couple of reasons. Well, I mean, let me say this. I moved to Texas because I felt guided to Texas. I felt that this is where we were supposed to be. My wife and I both did through prayer. However, intellectually, I moved here for a couple of reasons. I thought one of the last places that where freedom really exists. Texas has created about 50% of all of the jobs during the Great Recession. It was Texas that pulled us through. And thank you, Texas. And I know they would just tip their hat and say, hey, not a problem. But I think even Texas is struggling now and will struggle because I think we're about to lose it because of the influx of Californians. And it's really kind of losing its understanding of what has made Texas so different. One of the states that was in the running, but I didn't think I could get anybody to move there because they were all moving from New York City, was Utah. And had I had to do it all over again, I think I would do Utah because Utah is not the state that it used to be. It's not some, you know, far out west kind of pioneer state. It is now a high tech hub and its economy is booming. Governor of Utah is joining us now. He has been the governor. This is your third term, isn't it, Governor?
It is. I'm in my 10th year now,
yeah.
Glenn.
I talked to you earlier this week, and I wanted to get you on the air for the one reason that you are signing in a couple of bills that the legislature has passed on abortion. And I think there's a movement happening in the country. For the first time, people are willing to look at this because those who have been saying, you know, rare and legal and safe don't mean those things anymore. They don't mean rare. They're shouting their abortion and they want it after birth, which is terrifying to me. Tell me what you guys have done in the state.
Well, thank you, Glenn. I'm honored to be on with you. And by the way, before we start, I ought to say to you, it's not too late to get a home in Utah. We'd love it. Here. We just had a new blanket of snow this morning. The skiing is great, the greatest snow on earth, and our economy is humming.
Well, I will tell you this, Governor. I got a call from Vineyard, Utah. I've never heard of Vineyard, Utah.
Oh, yes. I know Vineyard.
And I got a call from Brooker's Founding Flavors Ice Cream. It's a new store that started. And they had me at 18% butter fat in their ice cream. I just want to say.
Well, I know Doug Ducey, who's the governor of Arizona, started Cold Stone Creamery. And yeah. He said, I sure love Utah because per capita, we're number one when it comes to consuming ice cream.
Oh,
so we're number one in a lot of good things.
Yeah.
But feel welcome to come to Utah. We'd love to have you here.
Thank you.
I hear what you say about this abortion issue, which has been kind of divided our country since Roe v. Wade, 1973. I do echo what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, that this should have been decided legislatively and not by nine people in black robes. I think the country would have been much better off if we didn't have activism from the court and let state by state by state, as sovereign states, in fact, determine these issues legislatively. And clearly, what has come out of this is clearly a loss of, I guess, elevating people's lives and humanity. And we just have a different form of birth control now called abortion. Hmm. That's not what it was designed to do or to be, and what the promise was before, as you said, I think, safe, legal, and rare, is anything but rare. And that's unfortunate, I think, for us as human beings.
So the legislature in Utah just passed a couple of bills. One, thank you as a father of a child of special needs, thank you for taking a stand on the most humbling among us, those with Down syndrome. You guys passed this and you're about to sign this in. Tell me what it is.
Yeah, so we've said that if you choose to have an abortion simply because you have a Down syndrome child, that's not appropriate, just as we would want to not discriminate against individuals with Down syndrome in our society. We shouldn't, in fact, discriminate against them in utero. And so we've passed a law, which I have signed now, which says that that's not a reason to have an abortion, to say, well, my child will have Down syndrome. The other one is we've signed into law is that we've moved it to 18 weeks as far as the timeline. So you cannot have an abortion in Utah under this law after 18 weeks. There are typical exceptions that we have in the law. A woman's life at risk, you know, if you have a rape or incest. There's some other exceptions there for brain damage of the fetus, etc. But we've moved it to 18 weeks with the belief that we are, in fact, stating to the world we believe in the sanctity of life, and we need to be pro-life, and I'm unabashedly and unapologetically pro-life, and I think that most of America feels that same way.
So, Governor, let me ask you this, because it's moving the opposite direction. Technology is, you're going to be able to live outside the mother's body, you know, at 4 weeks eventually, probably. So it's moving in the other direction, that it's viable. I think it's Georgia that just passed the heartbeat. I mean, when we stop, when somebody stops at an accident, the first thing they do is anybody alive? Check the heartbeat. When you hear the heartbeat, that's when you know that person is alive. They're going now for the heartbeat law, which they're going to come under all kinds of scrutiny and trouble for that. But doesn't that make sense where we should be going and headed?
Well, when I was in the Army doing my basic training, I can tell you that's exactly what my first aid classes taught us. First check for a pulse, heartbeat, clear the airway, and then treat for shock. Stop the bleeding and treat for shock. That was the order of things. You always check the pulse and heartbeat. That was a first sign of life.
Yeah.
And so I agree with what George is saying. I think the heartbeat aspect of this, which you can detect after 6 weeks, ought to give us all pause. That's a sign of life. Now, what would we want to do to interfere with that progress in the womb, particularly until it's ready to be born? Why would we want to interfere with that? It prick our consciences to say, what we're doing here is probably not what we would do as humanity, whether it's a religious belief or just the values that we have as human beings and association one with another. But the heartbeat issue, I think, is one that's always bothered me. In my view of being pro-life, is when that heartbeat's detected, that certainly is a sign of life.
We're talking to Governor Gary Herbert, the governor of Utah, who has I reached out to him earlier this week and really wanted to know if anybody in his office could even attend this screening, and he immediately said, I'll be there. And so you're coming tonight.
We're going to come down. In fact, I'm bringing the first lady. She wants to be there, and I'm going to try to bring the first son. Again, I think it sounds exciting. I've seen the trailer. I don't know the movie, and I don't know Miss Johnson. Is that her name?
Yeah, Abby Johnson. Yeah, it's surprisingly uplifting. It's not a dirge. It's not one of these, you know, movies you have to see. It's a movie that you'll be glad you saw, because you'll leave there uplifted. It's got a great message to it. But I'm telling you, if your teenagers go, they made it rated R for a reason, to stop teenagers from being allowed into it. Because if your teenager sees it, they will forever be, anybody who sees this, your conviction of this is murder will happen when you see this movie.
Well, it should give us pause, and it should give us opportunity to think through what we've done, maybe reverse what we have as policy in this country. And you mentioned science, Glenn, and I do believe that's an important aspect of what's happening now. If we have a child born premature, science is able to save their life. in a much earlier time. More premature preemies, you know, are being saved now because of science and advancement in science that we have ever before in our history. Well, if we can do that to save a child that's born premature, again, why would we not, in fact, want to save a child that comes out for whatever reason? And I guess some of the horror stories we're hearing as we let this premature infant sit there and gasp and just die because we won't assist it. And that's the part I find just really hard to understand. Why would you not assist anybody who's gasping for life, trying to breathe and trying to be viable, and yet we have somebody that would say, no, we'll just, if it can't survive on its own, it will die. Be like you being under water and having a aqua system, you know, and somebody pulls the plug on you, and you gasp there and say, well, if you can't do it on your own, we'll just let you die. Mm. I mean, it's very similar, and I think science is certainly teaching us that that there's opportunities for them to survive outside the womb with science and scientific help, and that ought to happen. We ought to be there prepared to help that unborn child survive.
Gary Herbert, Governor of Utah. We'll see you tonight, sir. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Glenn. Great
God bless. You bet.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.